Welcome back. This is episode 16 of Books Closed.
This episode is sponsored by Machine Machine Co., online video workshops that teach you how to be smarter than your tattoo machine, and Split Arrow Prints, print like you give a shit.
I find myself increasingly interested in tattooers who take on businesses and projects outside of their day-to-day tattooing. And in last week's episode, we looked at a tattoo company made by a non-tattooer, as well as one made by a tattooer. And I think that the contrast of those two really show the difference in results that you can get with different intent and different experiences, among other things. And it forces me to really think, what does it take to launch a big idea? And what happens if it just doesn't work? I'm sure we can all think of different things we've seen come and go, from products to businesses and stores and websites, social media networks over our lifetime. And oddly enough, when I was preparing last week's episode, I got a message from Kyle, a tattooer from Toronto, at laser_wizard. And he wrote, "Dude, were you ever on eCircuit? It was a social media platform that Brad Farrell tried to launch in the MySpace era. Brad was the owner of High Roller Tattoo out in Long Island. At one point, Grime was holding a contest on there giving away a tattoo. Because only people who Brad was friends with were on it in the beginning, it was a social site made entirely from Ferrari enthusiasts, really good tattooers, and strippers. You should see if you can talk to Brad about it. Super funny, weird slice of online tattoo history. eCircuit. He specifically had tattooers in mind when he put the interface together. Nice galleries, no limit on the number of pictures you could post. It even had a biomech skin." This message definitely caught my eye, and I am not familiar with eCircuit, and I don't know that I know much about Brad Farrell, which is weird since I started tattooing in upstate New York, and Long Island wasn't that far away. I feel like I should have heard something of him. So I put on my investigator's hat and went to Google to try to dig up some dirt on Mr. Bradley Farrell. And oddly enough, I cannot find very much about his tattooing online. I can't find any pictures. I can see that he was the owner of High Roller Tattoo on Long Island, but that's about it. But what I do find are some websites and reviews and write-ups about eCircuit.
Founded by ex-tattoo artist and skateboard filmmaker Bradley Farrell, eCircuit gives you the power to control your online community with the ability to share, store, and connect all of your contacts from anywhere in the world.
And as far as information about Bradley himself, I found a couple videos about his love for classic cars.
Senses, it brings you to this other level of enjoyment that I can't get with the modern cars. Bradley Farrell, CEO of the finest automobile auctions.
At this point, I am tuned in, and I know that the only way that I can find out more about Bradley Farrell is to go talk to him myself. Luckily, through the small world that is tattooing, I was put in touch with Bradley, and we set up a time for me to go down to New York and set up shop, and we talked about all of it. Got to learn about eCircuit, and I quickly realized that he's the kind of guy who has done many things in his life, from tattooing to being a shop owner, to filmmaking, to playing music, being a pool shark. He has done many things, many interests, many businesses, many big ideas. So I look forward now to sharing with you my conversation with Bradley Farrell. Where are we right now? We're in New York.
We are in New York City, like Central Park South.
There's a lot doing out there.
It's definitely a good place to be. So,
how long have you lived in this particular spot?
Only a few months, actually. Maybe like 5 months. I used to live on the Upper East Side.
So for those of you listening, this is Bradley Farrell.
Glad to be here in my own home.
Yes. So this episode of the show, I've been looking into some tattoo products and ideas and companies that have spawned from tattooers that come along. And on this quest, I received a message where someone asked if I was familiar with a project you had in the early 2000s. It was entitled eCircuit.
Mm-hmm.
Is that how you pronounce that?
It's exactly how you pronounce it, yeah.
eCircuit, I was told, would you call it a social network, or was it more than that?
I guess that's what it was. Yeah, I guess that's what it was. In the beginning, it was like right at the time of MySpace. Facebook was not open to the public. So yeah, I guess that's what it was. But it was really directed towards a little bit more of a counterculture. mm-hmm. you know, specifically, like, all the stuff that I was into, really, you know, like yeah. cars and tattoos and more, like, art-centric people.
What was your initial motivation? Did you see the success of MySpace, maybe, and you thought maybe there, or was it more of a need? You thought some, there was a need that you could fill with an idea?
I think that it really came down to, I started a car club, I think it was in 2003, something like that. And it was called the EC. And it was, you know, a collective of car enthusiasts and pretty big car collectors. And it was like when the forums became really big, right? So like forums were it before social networking was it. And I still actually like forums a lot better than what we have today, you know, to some degree. And it was really just like a test there to see the camaraderie that was built with inside of a small network of people and how, like, there's so many things that are going on in these other people's lives other than these cars that it started to just kind of overflow into the forum, and then other sub-forums started to take place of, you know, this was my weekend and here's my family. And then we really started to get to know one another like a very tight knit group of people. And I saw the power at that moment. I really was not on MySpace. You know, I mean, people were telling me about it and stuff and I'd go take a look, but I don't really think I even had a profile.
So were you tattooing amidst all of this?
Actually, I did have a profile.
Everyone
I did,
did,
because believe it or not, that's how I met Eddie Deutsch, like for real, which is mm-hmm. so weird. I had stopped tattooing at that point. Mm-hmm. I think it was in 2003.
So you liked the forums, and then you thought that maybe you could have something that was more all-encompassing for outside of just the car interest for people.
Yeah, exactly. And then from there, you know, I really saw the power of a social network, right? And it was the social network of a forum, but it was a closed forum. So it was like an invite-only kind of thing, and you had to know somebody and all this kind of stuff. And that's how I met a lot of big car collectors, too. And it was just very, very tight, you know? And so I wanted to create, I guess it would be called a social network, from those people, and then not have it so closed, just have it more open to other car enthusiasts, other artists, and then bring, you know, I felt like there was so much involved with, like, even tattooers and stuff at the time. They like cars, so, like, you know, bring them involved as well. Mm-hmm. And that's how it was started, really.
So are you a tech guy, or did you learn all this stuff as you went through this project? Or
no, I definitely consider myself, like, when things aren't there and I kind of, like, want them to be there, like, I'll just dive into it as much as I can to learn about it. So I don't think I came from the tech industry at all. Even with tattooing, you know, I mean, I tattooed for a very long time, and I was getting tattooed at 13, 14 years old. And, you know, you just fall into things, and you basically say, well, this is kind of missing from this, so I want to introduce this to that. And that's what happened with the tech world, you know. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what I would consider myself to be, really, like
a Renaissance tech man.
If you say so. Some people have actually said, you know, some very, very close people to me have said, that's what you are. And I still don't understand that. You know, I just basically, if there's a space that's needed to be filled and I feel like I could fill it, then that's where I go.
Yeah. So you're a problem solver.
That's a better,
probably an easier way to put it.
Yeah.
It's not as pretentious.
Yeah.
Once you start using the word Renaissance to describe yourself, it might feel a little sticky.
Yeah.
So, I mean, do you think that you are, maybe the idea was just too early?
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Because it seems like now that the way we link up with each other is such a concern for people.
Yeah. So Google Wave tried to reinvent email, and they used exactly that. It was drag and drop this person into this email. So you weren't like, it just immediately happened too. It was very, very cool, mm-hmm. but it was mine first.
Who do we got to call to get that idea back?
the tech world moves way too fast to, yeah. you know, it moves way too fast for, I think, yes, it was too early when I was doing it. And you see it for like a blip, like Google Wave tried it for a blip, but now Google Wave's like, you know, a closet inside of Google. It just says maybe Google Wave and there's like a right. mop in there or something. I just threw it away.
I was actually able to pull up what is probably the main page of eCircuit.
Wow, really?
Yep. So at the top of the page, it says, this might have even been like an FAQ or something, and it says, what is eCircuit? eCircuit is an extreme lifestyle community, artists, speed, and thrill seekers, nonconformists, extremophiles of every variety, that's who we are, ready for a change. In the ecosystem of life, there are sheep and there are wolves. Which one are you?
I wasn't the copywriter, I'll tell you that.
Well, I think it's interesting. I mean, it's definitely
but yes, it
playing
passed
it
by.
Up. Yeah.
Yeah, it passed by and I was like, yeah, it sounds good. You know, that's what it is.
But I feel like so much of social media now is built to appeal to everyone.
Yeah.
And it's almost cool and like edgy to see something that's more specific. That the only goal isn't to get as many people on for as long as possible, because that's kind of like how it preys on all of us now, and that's what a lot of
the
tattooers talk
effect.
About. Yeah, that we're all like getting swallowed up by Instagram and stuff.
Yeah.
So I think it's kind of cool to have like a more specific thing, although that would probably never fly today because you'd have someone above you or someone next to you saying, you know, if you take off the extremophile word, you're not going to scare as many older dads who might like cars still.
Yeah. Well, you know what's interesting? I mean, little Cosms are built still within social networks. I mean, you have DeviantArt, right? I mean, DeviantArt is a social network, and it is all for artists. And it's great. I mean, you have Etsy. I mean, that's kind of it as well. There's actually a car designing community called Local Motors. This is another one, but they're little tiny things that, you know, they're not, they're big in their world, right? But in like as an entire space, it just gets swallowed up by just like what you said. It's, you know.
And then maybe that's coming back now. Maybe we're zooming in more than we, because it just gets too big and then no one has a place in it anymore.
It's true. It could be, but I think that, and I don't know. I mean, I think that there have been, like Instagram-like things that try to pop up specifically for a niche. But do they last? You know?
Not usually.
It's also because it's a tremendous amount of money and even if you're on the Amazon cloud or whatever, you're spending, you know, money. eCircuit was way before the cloud, and it was a tremendous amount of money to keep that thing alive. And that's why it really died. Two reasons why, and I'm sure you've heard this, but the two biggest reasons why anything fails, like a business fails, is lack of focus or lack of funding. And it was definitely not focus. You know, we were trying a lot of things in a lot of different spaces, and we got a good amount of traction as well, but the funding just killed it, you know. I mean, burning through $50,000 on space that you're hoping, you know, something from, do you remember G4, like Attack of the Show or anything like that, right?
Yeah.
So like they did a thing on eCircuit and it drove a tremendous amount of traffic to the site. But back then, if you weren't ready for that kind of traffic, you had to buy that kind of space already on your servers, right? It wasn't like, oh, it crashed, now I could buy it, you know? Now that doesn't even exist. It's just in the cloud, and you pay for what you use. But it's still, when you're talking about hundreds of millions of people on Facebook, that's a tremendous amount of something.
Yeah, I can't imagine trying to compete with Facebook or Instagram at this point. Well, I guess they're the same thing now, but I think that would be the biggest killer probably now in trying to do even a smaller, more focused version of it, is that there's just not going to be the same amount of people.
Right.
And it's always going to feel like you're going to a place where nobody else is. And maybe some people will like that. But if you're trying to like build an audience, or if you're an artist or whatever, you're trying to put something that you make out and nobody's there to see it, then it, I think it loses a lot of its charm.
Yeah, for sure. Well, there's a, you know, the biggest reason why all of those social networks worked, I learned this really early on, and I was like, well, mine's going to be faster. Mine's going to be slicker. Mine's going to be cooler. Mine's going to have cooler people on it, you know? Mine's going to have more features. Mine's going to this. No. Are my friends on it? Like, that's it, period. Are people on it, right? Mm-hmm. Are my friends using it? No, I'm not there, you know? And even if you have, like, a good collective of tattoo artists that are there, now you're just having, like, great tattoo artists that are sharing stuff with themselves, but you're not really bringing in this, you know, these other people to, because they're on Instagram, right? And then maybe you only have 100 followers instead of 100,000 followers. And right. Your dopamine, like.
Yeah, yeah. It's a little too humbling for some people.
Right.
Yeah, you see the alarm clock go off in the morning and you're not sure it's even worth waking up anymore.
Right.
You don't get those likes.
Every day.
How old were you when you started tattooing?
I was 18.
So that was like your first thing that you went for.
That's right. That was the first thing I really went for. Yeah, I mean, you know, I worked for my father's business and stuff like that, but it was never, ever me. My siblings work there, and I mean, my sister actually runs that company today. So, you know, it worked for somebody in the family, but for me, it just never really worked. So tattooing was always my thing. Like I said, I was getting tattooed at 14 years old, went to a biker shop, got tattooed, came home. I actually told my parents, I was like, on Monday after school, I'm getting tattooed. They were like, yeah, sure. Sure you are. I was like, no, I'm serious. You know, all my friends were like, nah, he's like serious, you know? They're like, yeah, sure. So I stayed late, went with like some seniors, got tattooed, vomited everywhere. It was like this, you know, that fucking cold sweat that comes over. Can I curse on here?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm going to try not to, but you know, that cold sweat that like comes over you and...
You think it's going to pass, and it doesn't.
You think it's going to pass, and then before you know it, I didn't pass out, but I vomited everywhere. You know, the guy was like, "Fucking toughen up, dude. Here's a pill. Sit still."
What did you get tattooed that day?
I got a dragon on my shoulder right here. It was cool, man. You know, I still get a tattoo today. I thought it was pretty cool. Yeah. It was like with wings, like a dragon, kind of with wings, very Game of Thrones. And so I came home and I, you know, I just showed my mom and I was like, yo, I told you. And she freaked out completely.
She's like, sick dragon pussy.
Totally freaked out. And 2 days later, it was removed. And my mom was like, oh my God, I'm going to cry forever. And I just didn't want to hear it anymore. So I was just like, all right, whatever, I'll get it removed. So I got it removed and I got smarter. And like a week later, I got my leg tattooed and I didn't show her. And then again and again and again and again and and then at some point, and by the way, this was like, you know, it was 14. It was like dermabrasion, right? There was no laser surgery then. It was like sanding it off, like a sandblaster. Huge scar and stuff. Now I have a big dragon over it. But, you know, I just started getting heavily tattooed. And before you knew it, I had sleeves at 18 and full back at 18. And I just wore a long sleeve shirt all the time around my parents.
But they knew you had them all, or was it?
No, I mean, you know, they
just don't want to bring attention to
it. I would be crazy to think that they didn't know. I knew my dad knew, and very conservative family, so weird. But one day I was really sick. I must have been like 21 or something, and I was like running to the bathroom in my room, and I was like naked. And my mom came in to see if I was okay, and she saw at that moment. It was just like... And it was funny, but, you know, that was the first time she saw all of it. And she was like, oh, my God. And my dad was like, what did you think? He was buying tattoo magazines at 14 years old. You know, he's always drawing on himself. He's,
yeah.
You know, what did you think?
So it was always tattooing for you. It just made sense that you would start tattooing.
Yeah.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Long Island. I grew up with a lot of great tattooers, you know, today. Mixed our own ink with, like, Mike Rubendahl and, like, my apartment and stuff. And stuff would just blow up and, you know, we're just covered in ink and stuff. Funny times.
Yeah.
Funny times.
Yeah. It's funny to think of younger tattooers not having the experience of, like, the blender exploding or having whatever color you were mixing. Just coat everything on you or in the room for, like, a day or two after. Like, you blow your nose and it's, like, green or red or yellow. Yeah.
You want to hear a crazy story? Really funny one. It's about Mike. So I got my hand tattooed by Mike Ledger, right? I was probably, I don't know, 19, something like that, 20. Well, I was married at 21. So all this is prior to that. So probably like 19. I got this hand tattooed by Mike Ledger at his apartment in Long Island. And he's like, yo, man, let's go to like the club and whatever. It was like me and Chris Koutsis and him. And I never met Rubendahl. Rubendahl just like kind of started tattooing at Da Vinci. So he was learning, you know, as we all were. And Chris is like, yo, this is Mike, this is Bradley. And yo, he just got his hand tattooed. So it's dark in the club, right? And Mike's like, oh, I can't really see it. So he like grabs this candle and he puts it over. He still can't see it. And he just pours hot wax all over my entire hand. But I'll tell you, I mean, I was like, I'll be right back, you know, like washed it off in the bathroom. But no tattoo ever healed better than my hand.
That's a secret.
That's a secret. So now I get tattooed, just pour hot wax on.
I mean, there could be something to
forget
that.
Forget about the bacitracin, you know?
Yeah. We'd start an aftercare company of candles and you just got to burn them for a little while and dump it all over your tattoo. People would go nuts for that. Everyone wants that like silver bullet to perfect tattoo heal.
It's a good one.
Did you make a tattoo magazine at some point?
That's funny. You know, a lot of things that I've, I go right to that point, right? Where like I do everything right to that moment and then I did it and then therefore I don't really have to put it out. So I just consider it's like, okay, I did it, you know. Like I wrote a poetry book, totally done, 100 poems, ready to be put out, not putting it out. You know, wrote, I don't know, 15 songs, have a whole record ready, not going to put it out, right? So tattoo magazine, yes. There was nothing, I mean, there were a lot of tattoo magazines coming out, you know, that were out at that time. Mm-hmm. International Tattoo, Skin and Ink, you know, all that stuff. But they just... they weren't what I felt me and my crew of people that were, you know, Whitehead and Grime and Rasher and, you know, O'Donnell and Timothy and, you know, all these guys that we grew up with really admiring. There wasn't like enough of that stuff in it that would really inspire me. So I had all these guys tattoo in my shop and I learned a tremendous amount of what not to do, right? And I would build portfolios. Like I had a Mike Wilson portfolio like this big, you know, he didn't even have a portfolio that big, but he would come to the shop. Grime too. I'd have like two portfolios that big because he worked with me for like a year. And I had all this stuff that no one ever saw. So I was like, man, I'm just going to make a tattoo magazine myself. And I interviewed Aaron Kane and Mike Wilson and Mike Ledger and Grime and all these guys, right? And I had a thing really put together really nicely and I made a prototype and I showed all these guys and I was like, what do you think? And they were like, this is great. You know, you got to put it out. And then like I had, you know, like twins and everything just kind of goes, you know, you have children and things just go to the side. Mm-hmm. And your children become the most important thing. So things that you want to do, not necessarily ever come to fruition. But yeah, I feel like it did come out and enough people saw it. If you're talking about it, that's interesting to me. You know, who told you that?
Dave Cavalcante. Yeah,
that's funny.
Yeah, I was collecting information about you because it's interesting to me when someone like approaches me to ask if I know about something or some stuff for the show. And I'm instantly more interested once I can't find information, like just searching around.
Yeah.
It's much more interesting when you have to ask around and you can kind of, oh, well, I think he did that. And then you talk to someone else. Oh, you know, I talked to Seth. He's like, oh yeah, I'll give you, you know, I'll text him right now. It's just like, everyone's connected. And that, and I mean, that's the kind of the cool thing as I like peel back layers of different tattooers and stuff as I try to build this show, that connecting me to people that I didn't previously know a ton about, but there's like so much to so much to consider.
I actually forgot about that until you just mentioned it, which is amazing, you know. And the last time I saw it, I don't know, maybe like 5 years ago, it was in like my bedroom, and I pull it out and I was like, wow, that's cool, you know, but oh my God, it was so 90s. Like everything was so 90s, you know, even like the background of the pages were like, I don't know, like melted, morphed, whatever. And then like the interviews were in like green type on black letter, like black background. It was.
Yeah. Toxic.
It was very, very funny. But it also was like really personal too, you know, like there were things that were really personal in it that I thought the tattoo magazines just didn't have, you know. Mike Wilson came to the shop and his wisdom tooth was killing him. So I was like, yo, let's just go to my dentist and he'll pull your wisdom tooth, you know. And I called my dentist, and my dentist was the coolest dude at that time. You'd go, it was in like a greenhouse. It wasn't even like an office or anything, right? It was a greenhouse. And you'd like watch the squirrels like run across and stuff. He'd give you so much gas and get you so fucked up. It's great. And so Mike Wilson's sitting there, and I'm just taking pictures, you know, and I'm like, this is going to be perfect for the magazine, man.
You were there as a journalist. Covering the Mike Wilson tooth pull.
So good. So good.
You could probably sell that tooth online now. tattoo collectors.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Along with some of the photos to verify its authenticity. Yeah. His rotting tooth.
But Dave Cavalcante, I mean, he saw it all. He saw it all unfold because he was, you know, he was the shop boy at that time. And he saw it all. Everyone come through, the magazine unfold, everything, you know, skateboarding. Like I had a skateboard ramp in the back and I built that and fish tanks and I mean everything. It was called like the Boys Club. High Roller, the Boys Club.
Is that shop still open?
It is still open. I sold it to Danny Miro and his brother John Miro, and then they sold it to Corey. Her name's Corey Good. And she's still there tattooing.
Does she still have a skate ramp?
Nah, that's all gone.
All the boys club shit. She got rid of that.
That was really funny. You know, so Grime and I were tattooing together for a while. We went to Japan. He stayed in Japan. I came back and I was like, fuck it, I'm gonna build a skateboard ramp in the drawing room, right? So like I got rid of the drawing room, built like a mini half pipe. He comes back ready to draw, opens the door. It's just a big skate ramp. And he's like, where am I gonna draw? You know, it's like this desk in the front. You don't need a drawing room. How cool is this? You're like, yeah, right, it's pretty cool.
And then draw on the ramp.
We would skate it, but it got bad, you know, after you have that kind of stuff just floating around a shop, you know. I mean, your clients come in, at least my clients would come in, and I'd be like, nah, I'm skating.
Right. Yeah, your priorities shift a little
bit. I'm not tattooing you today, you know.
Yeah, too many distractions.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny that you said how older tattoo magazines just didn't have any personal, like you know, it lacked a lot. And yeah. I feel like I still notice that in a lot of interviews that I read and stuff. They're just so, you know what the interview is going to be before you read it. And right. It's so lame. And you can usually tell that they like emailed someone a bunch of questions and then they emailed a bunch of answers. And it's just like so sterile and you don't really get a sense of who anybody is.
Yeah.
And there's almost like, what's the point of even doing an interview like that?
Yeah,
it's lame. I just feel like it misses so much, and especially in terms of tattooing, they're the coolest. As cool as someone's tattoos that they do can be, the coolest part about them is always them and their stories and what they know and what they've been, you know, what they've experienced and everything. And I feel like it's such a missed opportunity to not even try to share that with anyone.
Yeah.
And you're like trying to put out media about tat stuff.
Oh yeah.
A word from our sponsors.
Are you feeling lost, hopeless, unsure what to do about spring breaks? And I'm not talking about your annual vacation to Myrtle Beach. I'm talking about when your spring snaps in two while you're tattooing. Don't just give up and trade all your coil machines for rotaries. Machine Machine is here to give you the goods, offering online video workshops to professional tattooers that will teach machine function, differences between liners and shaders, and a better understanding of the physics behind springs and their relation to frame geometry. Don't be ashamed that you're holding something in your hand every day that you know nothing about. This is an opportunity for all you tattooers to up your game and get in control of your equipment. There are no enrollment periods anymore, so sign up now and start your course today. Use code BOOKSCLOSED when signing up to get $50 off. It's all happening now at machinemachine.co. Don't forget to use coupon code BOOKSCLOSED for $50 off. And stay up to date with course information by following at machinemachine.co on Instagram. We're also sponsored by Split Arrow Prints. Print like you give a shit. Located in Atlanta, Georgia, Split Arrow Prints works with artists to make the best possible prints, stickers, and promotional materials. Their tattooer and artist-owned offering luxury printing service, including giclée printing with watercolor paper, die-cut stickers, convention banners, business cards, and more. They understand tattooers and the level of quality that you expect. Do you have an idea for a custom printing project? Well, Split Arrow Prints is not scared of your weird-ass idea. Get in touch with them today for a quote on your next printing order at splitarrowprints.com and follow them on Instagram at splitarrowprints.
The best way to support Books Closed is by supporting our sponsors. You can find their links in the show notes or booksclosedpodcast.com.
Another thing I wanted to ask you from that eCircuit page, what was the deal with Circuit Vision? Was it like, were you producing video content?
Yeah, absolutely.
What was that about?
So it was interesting. Why I kind of stopped tattooing was, you know, I was always a skateboarder. Right. And a lot of my friends became pros eventually. One of my friends specifically was Gino Iannucci. He skates for, you know, Girl Chocolate. And now I think it's fucking awesome. That's the name of the company that he skates for. And he moved back from L.A. and he opened up a skate shop. And he was like, I want to open up a skate shop. And I had a whole basement that was just, I don't know, we would like shoot guns back there and like just do shit. So I was like, yeah, I'll rent you the basement, you know? So we opened a skate shop in the basement, and then he wouldn't have anyone to go film with. So I bought a camera and I would go out and I'd film content for the skate film. Yeah, right, at the time. It was like a Ty Evans, Spike Jones girl film, right? And then I started to not really tattoo anymore. And I just started to just go out and film and film and film content. And then eventually I bought a Ferrari of all weird things. And then I started to hang out with that kind of crew. And then I started to film specifically like Ferrari events and Ferrari collectors. And then I had all of this content. And then I would go to like, I was tattooing a little bit, right? So I'd go to like conventions and, again, you know, either Grime or Seth or Mike Wilson or somebody would be tattooing with me, or I'd be tattooing with them, right? However you want to put it. But then I'd be filming that whole thing. And I felt like I became more of like a cinematographer than I'm going to stick into tattooing, you know? And I was just filming all this content. And then before you know it, when eCircuit grew, I had all this content. And it was cars and art and skateboarding and tattoos and all that. So then Circuit Vision was born as a content like channel, a part of eCircuit. And it was cool. And then from there you were able to like build contests around it, you know? So I had a tremendous amount of footage of Grime, and I would start to put that stuff up, and then I had Grime like design a page, and then it was like win a tattoo by Grime, you know. I forgot what the person had to do, though, in order to win a tattoo. But either way, somebody won. Flew him out there and got tattooed by Grime. And then we filmed that. and that was cool. And then it's not even on YouTube anymore. It was at one point, but I think it was taken down because of the like I put a Hammerhead song to it or something. I think it just got.
So all that stuff was hosted on YouTube at the time, or did you have it right from the website?
Well, I did have it, you know, on Circuit Vision, so I did have it. I mean, we had so much space that I was just paying for. Why not just have all that stuff live there too? Right. But yeah, it was also on YouTube.
What year would you guess that was? Because that to me, that sounds like another idea that was too early. Because that's just like describing what people do now.
East Circuit was only around for maybe about a year and a half. So between that period in time, you know, maybe 2005, maybe 2006, maybe 2006. But definitely not 2007, you know? And yeah, it was early. I mean, I think a lot of things, everything comes with timing, for sure. Everything is with timing. And maybe sometimes I'm a little bit ahead of what you want to, you know, what's missing there, and I want to, like, create it, so I do, but it's just too early. Yeah. Seems like a lot of things that I do are like that.
So what did you shift to after E-Circuit?
Digital marketing. Complete opposite. I felt like I knew how to market, you know, and I knew it's very difficult to market to myself. So, like, you kind of see through all that stuff, I'm sure, to you too. I think, like, the tattoo community in general, it's just, like, what's authentic, what's not, and, like, you can just see right through it, and it just doesn't work, you know? It's like the man. And I found, I came across another person who I met who was trying to help us raise money to keep E-Circuit alive. He's a very, very smart guy. His name is Matt Johnston. Actually, I just saw him yesterday, believe it or not. And we became business partners. And he was like the sales guy. And I was like the authentic marketing guy. But I didn't go to, you know, any school or anything like that. But he was able to win big business through big companies like Cisco Systems and, you know, Kraft Foods and Consumer Reports and coffee companies and all sorts of things. And we were, you know, we were able to come up with just really creative ideas that they weren't doing. And we won a lot of business that way, you know, and eventually we just sold our client list and I moved into another, we both love the tech stuff and just, you know, creating something from nothing kind of thing. And then we went into a tech company with one of our other partners at Cisco Systems. And then we sold that technology to Cisco Systems. And I just really didn't do much after that. No.
Out of ideas?
I got really bitter with... And it's funny because you hear it a lot, you know, you definitely hear it a lot from, I feel like I hear it a lot from the tattoo community, like the man, the corporate, the this, the that, like stay away from, you know, I mean, even Black Claw, you know, needles, tubes made by tattooers for tattooers, you know, yeah. No one's involved outside the tattoo community. And I felt like, you know, even though these people wrote really, really big checks, they wanted to do was... First of all, it's not their money, right? It's the big corporate's money. Then it trickles down. And so then it goes to the brand manager. And the brand manager has a budget to spend. And the brand manager isn't as creative thinking as, let's say, an agency is. Is this worth it? Me being like the punk rock skateboard kid, like tattoo guy that's doing this stuff for the man. And it really just kind of pissed me off. You know, it was like no checks big enough and... It was just, I just felt like weird because really what they did was they just pointed a finger and said, oh, it didn't work because you guys. And it's like, no, it didn't work because you put 5 messages in there, a big, huge buy button, and everyone just was like, see ya. They looked at it for 3 seconds and walked away. Mm-hmm. But if it would have been how we first presented it to you, you would have had some other data there, you know. But right now, you have the same amount of data as you always have, which is it ain't working.
And it's funny how they can miss the mark like that so many times and not learn the lesson.
Yeah.
But it must just be because there's too many people involved that maybe one person sees it, but you can't get the whole, you know, everyone on the same page. And that must be where a lot of big teams will fail.
That's right. And that's why a lot of times it's, you know, some people will crowdsource things, and that's not really the right way either.
What do you think about that stuff?
Crowdsourcing?
Yeah. It seems to be the way most people approach a lot of projects.
I think crowdfunding is a really interesting thing that's taken off and works, mm-hmm. you know. Kickstarter, Indiegogo, you know, I have friends that work at Indiegogo, and they're like, this is amazing. Can't even ever think that something like this would ever really take place. It just will never be an entrepreneur-like thing with inside of the corporate environment. You have too much, you know, you have too much backing inside of that for you to really feel the pressure of entrepreneurship, because you're still getting your paycheck tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And as an entrepreneur, you're not, you know what I mean? You're sacrificing everything, and yeah, maybe you'll stay there late, you know, for the man, but it's very, very different when you're not getting your paycheck every week doing something that you believe in, you know. How can there be any kind of real passion there and sacrifice that we, you know, are doing? Like, I mean, you're doing right now, mm-hmm. you know. You're doing this because you absolutely love it. You getting paid to do this? Fuck no. So you're doing it because you love it. And you want to, you know, you want to tell the stories that matter yeah. to you. And that should matter to the rest of the world, really. Like, hopefully in 20 years, 100 years, whatever. I mean, 100, no one's going to give a shit in 100 years, but.
You never know.
But you never know.
When through the rubble, they find your tattoo magazine prototype, and they pull it out, and they say, man, this green type
so
is beautiful.
90s, man. Watching on Netflix.
Except by then, everyone will speak only in such weird slang, it'll be unrecognizable language.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think it's anything creative, it you get so much out of the struggle of, I mean, that sounds like cliche, but the struggle of it, or the constraints or whatever that you're coming up against, that you definitely lose so much when it's just not there at all. When
right.
you've got the security and you're just floating along. And it's like when someone wants to get tattooed and they say, do whatever you want. It's like, give me something. I need like some parameters.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's just better when you can like rise to the occasion of something that they want or whatever. But,
yeah.
So, you said your dad owned a business, and are your siblings all business-minded people for the most part?
I think everybody likes to think that they are, you know, not even just my family. I think that everybody likes to think that they are, because that's what society wants you to be, is, you know, well-rounded, and you can either work for somebody or you could own your own business. Either way, even if you work for somebody, you have some kind of business savvy, right?
Mm-hmm.
So my sister runs the company. My brother, I don't really know. My other brother does work for the company as well. But it took a long time, you know. It was like, yes, I am. No, I'm not. Okay, this person's going to be like the next one in charge. No, okay, bang, bang, bang. And then it just like fits as it is today.
Could have been you.
Never wanted it to be me.
Ever since that first dragon tattoo, it was
yeah.
never going to be you. What do you think gives you the confidence to pursue? Because we were talking as I was setting up, how you said that you get really, really heavy into something, and then you're like feverish wanting to learn about it and know about it and pursue it. And then, like you said, after, it doesn't even matter if it comes out. You do the project. And for me, that means that you're just getting the self-fulfillment from like actually doing it, which is the most genuine motive, I think. So what do you think gives you the confidence to just feel like you're able to pursue whatever you're interested in?
That's a really good question.
Because I think that's what a lot of people lack.
Shit. That's a really good question. Okay, so I was terrible at school, right? I hated school, never was good at school, was like terrible at math, never wanted to go to school, and got thrown out of four schools. So I went to like five different schools. And I don't even know how I graduated. Maybe my parents paid for, you know, me to be graduated or something. I don't know. And I never saw myself as being like what society feels you should grow up to be, you know, like you go to school and you're going to be this now, you know. I'm going to go to college and I'm going to focus on this and therefore that's what I'm going to be and I'm going to work towards a trajectory in my life and that's what I'm going to be. A doctor, lawyer, you know, finance guy, whatever it is. I felt like I want to learn what I'm into only, really. Look, when I was tattooing, I loved tattooing. And I wanted... So I went to school of visual arts, right, to be an illustrator. I wanted to be a comic book artist. I don't even know how I got in there. I was a terrible artist. Terrible, terrible artist. I couldn't draw shit, especially anatomy. Forget about that, right? That's like one of the most hardest things to do. And then I was like, oh, I'm going to be a tattoo artist. I'll just trace stuff, learn like what a wing should look like, you know, on an eagle and trace dragon heads and just... And I'll learn that way, like how to draw. But I was still a terrible artist, terrible. And until I met those guys that were inspirations for me, like Grime, like Whitehead, like, you know, Wilson. I'm sure I'm missing a lot of people here, right? But like those are the guys I spend a lot of time with. And I would say Grime mostly because I spend so much time with him. That he would look at what I was drawing and he'd be like, dude, that sucks. You can't tattoo that on somebody. That was like, so when you go to art school, guy comes over and it's like fine art. And it's like, oh, that's beautiful. Great job. Let's start over now, right? He wouldn't tell you what's actually wrong with whatever you're doing. He'd just say, start over, start over, start over. So this was the first time that I was having brutal, like, you know, brutal, like a real brutal kind of engagement with somebody that I kind of looked up to. And it was like, that's wrong, but this is why it's wrong. So try it again and do it like this, right? And before you know it, like, oh, that's why it's wrong. Okay, now I draw this. And you'd be like, yeah, see that fucking, that works. Okay, great. Still sucks, but it works.
Sucks less.
Yeah. And then you start tattooing with these guys and you start learning what works, what doesn't work. And before you know it, I felt like I learned tattooing technically enough and artistically enough that I knew I never wanted to be the best. I never wanted to be one of those guys. That was just not in my DNA. And I then decided that I wanted to do something else. You just dive into something else. Something else that really, really inspired me. And at that moment was film. Because I was filming, you know, skateboarding and stuff like that. And then I started filming cars and stuff. And I really started to get into that. Like, what is it about film that is inspiring to me? I know how to tattoo. Now I want to know how to be a cinematographer or a filmmaker or something like, you know. And when I told a lot of the tattoo community this, I didn't tell them the way I'm telling you, right? I was just like, yeah, I'm not going to tattoo anymore. I'm going to go do this. And they were, a lot of people were pissed. You know, a lot of my friends were like, dude, what gives you the right? Like, what, like, this is all I have. Like, what are you, where are you going? What are you doing? Like, and they took it about like them, like I was dissing them or something like that, you know?
Like you didn't appreciate tattooing.
Right. And I was like, no. I love tattooing. And like, you're one of my best friends, you know, for sure. But I really want to learn something else. I want to do something else. And then after that, technology really moved me. You know, I saw where the world was moving. And I was like, I want to learn that. I don't care if I didn't go to school for it. I don't care if I did this, whatever. I mean, there's a point in time where I bought probably 100 shark books just because I wanted to learn about sharks, you know? And then, like, I had a 750-gallon fish tank in the tattoo shop, and I would put sharks in there. and eels and all sorts of stuff, just like things that are inspiring, you know, like I would dive into full speed. And I guess it's called an addictive personality, really. And then it's interesting, and people will say full circle, right? But I don't know if it's really, I thought about this for a while, because I just did another, I just did a tattoo in the first time in 13 years on a friend, Danny. And I was like, oh man, full circle. And I was like, is it full circle? I don't think so. I think it's just a line, you know? It's a line of progression of things that, that you do. And then you get to here and you learn that and then you do this and you do that. And then it's like almost a whole other lifetime, right? It can't be like this. Like that's, I'm an infant if it comes full circle. So it's a straight line, goes like there. And it's what I love to do the most was tattoo. And now that I've kind of done everything that I wanted to do, I feel like at least that I've explored the things that I want to do. And I've been lucky enough to have some successes and many failures in my life to teach me what is important in my life and what's not. And I think it's, you know, going back to the roots of my favorite people. My favorite people are definitely the tattoo industry that I grew up with. And when I did, I'll tell you something interesting. I actually had Danny come over here and he just tattooed me on the floor. Real Japanese old school style, right? There was no chairs. There was no nothing. It was like just on the floor with a sheet. And like we use this as, you know, dipping the ink and whatever. And Danny tattooed me. It was like an RIP for my best friend at the time, who's just had to have it done, had to have it done. And he knew him, so he had to do it, right? So when it was done, I was not thinking about tattooing or anything. I was like, yo, that's so cool. Thanks so much. That was awesome. It was like 2 a.m. I'll see you later. He was like, oh, no, no, we're not done. I was like, what do you mean I'm done? He's like, you're going to tattoo me now. I was like, I haven't tattooed in 13 years. I'm not tattooing you now, you know? He's like, yeah, you got all your machines up there and stuff. And I was like, those machines haven't run. Like, I turned on one Seth machine, I think, maybe a couple of months ago. The spring just bang, you know? It was, like, all rusted and everything. But Danny let me use his stuff. And Dave Cavalcanti actually sent me the machine that I gave him. He wanted me to teach him how to tattoo. Right. And I was like, no, I don't want any apprentices. I'm not going to ever do that. But like, you know, all these guys are coming to the shop. Ask them. Maybe you go move to Florida or something like that. He went to work at Inksmith and Rogers with Mike Wilson. When he left, I gave him a really great Seth liner that I had. You know, I was like, here, man, here's your liner. Just like I put on Instagram just a couple of, you know, maybe like 2 weeks ago, thinking about tattooing again. And this dude sends me back the machine and was like, yo, like, you got to do it, you know? So anyway, long story short, I pulled the first line on Danny and I was like, how am I not doing this? That was the first thing that came to my head. Every line then from there on, it was like I never left it, you know? It was actually like this epiphany that came over me. It was really spiritual, if you want to call it that. But it didn't feel like, I didn't feel nervous. I didn't feel anything other than, how am I not doing this? Not saying I'm going to start tattooing again, but just like it felt so right, you know? That's a pretty strong thing. And everything else, like, I mean, other books that I have of other things, like I'm burning in the fireplace like last night.
Sounds like you're in a real transitional period right now.
Yeah, man. You know, I gotta buy a Corvette.
I wish I could have gotten some great, like, slow mo B roll of you burning books in a manic episode last night. That'd have been great.
I just didn't want the fire to go out, you know. And I had like a Duraflame. I didn't have any wood, so I was like, whatever.
I feel like if you were to tattoo at any capacity at this point, it would probably be a different experience than you remember, because you'd you might not feel the pressure from yourself to like maybe even think or pursue other things. Because if you always had that urge that you were trying to, or you, I don't know if you call it an urge, but just as you would perceive it, an interest in something else at that time, then it's going to like fog it up and it's like a grass is always greener kind of thing.
Yeah.
So if you're kind of at a place where you can just enjoy tattooing and there's like not the pressure and it's like, it could be a completely different thing.
Yeah. You know, it's wild too, because I see that there was definitely, I mean, there's always pressure, right? I mean, there's a lot of pressure just to either draw on spot or, you know, draw on somebody or whatever. I mean, you know, you're feeling confident. You're feeling like it's a different time. I don't have, like, my kids are grown up, you know, they go to college now. Like, it's not like I have to be home for something. My life has completely changed. I mean, 20 years divorced, you know, like, I mean, a 20-year marriage, now divorced. Like, I live in Manhattan, and things are very, very, very different in my life. And I have a lot of really supportive people around me. And some of those people are, you know, as I said, are tattooers that I've looked up to my whole life. And they're like, yo, you got to do, like, Chris Garver was like, yo, you want to tattoo at the shop? Like, come tattoo at the shop. Burt Crack was like, you want a tattoo? Like, you know, tattoo. David Cavalcanti's like, I have one spot left here. I'm saving it for you, you know? Like, there's a lot of support throughout the community. And there's no pressure. I feel like there's no pressure. I could probably tattoo once a day and get my fulfillment out of that, or once a week and get my fulfillment out of that. I do know that I want to do it again. There's no question in my mind, because after I pulled that left first line, it was like, it just hit like a lightning bolt. You know, why am I not doing this? Even if it's once a year, it doesn't matter. It's like, I got to do it. So you're right. There's a lot of pressure there, but there wouldn't be as much pressure as if, you know, I started again.
It always interests me to talk to someone who tattooed for a while and then just doesn't, because like you said, a lot of tattooers see no life after tattooing. Do you think that like the lifetime long-term tattooer as a career is sustainable for most people?
Tattooing takes a serious toll on your body. There's no way around that. You know, I tattooed for 12 years and my back hurt. And, you know, I mean, people tattoo for 40 years and I mean, I don't know how they do it, right? Your eyes go, your hand, you get carpal tunnel. Like, there's just a million things that take place in a tattooer's life. I think it's striking the right balance, like certain artists do, certain tattoo artists do, that they find they're going to paint, they're going to sculpt, they're going to make music, they're going to do all these other things that still revolve around that world, but it's not just specifically tattooing. I think it kind of threw people for a loop that I didn't, I mean, I am a musician, you know, I'd like to think I'm an artist, like the other things that I do, but to go in a total polar opposite of like technology or marketing or something like that, I don't think that that's a norm for the tattoo community, right? But I think that if you have that outlook, like, hey, I'm going to watercolor paint, you know, like it's still going to be maybe tattoo centric, but I'm just going to paint. That's a long life of still staying into the tattoo community and being respected and having fun and you know, living a life that you love to live. It doesn't actually have to be specifically tattooing for 40, 50 years, right? Like Ed Hardy, I mean, look at Ed Hardy. Shit. Did you see that last thing on Vice? Mm-hmm. I can't get over how he has collected all of his stuff. Like
everything.
And in perfect, like, unison, like, you know, chronological order, yeah. However you want to say it. Right? But, like, that's incredible to me. Yeah. I called Grimer after I saw that, and I was like, I'm flying to San Francisco, and we're putting all your stuff in order.
Yeah.
He's like, ah, it'll take me like 5 days. I'm like, I don't care. We're doing it.
Yeah. I don't think most people have the foresight to even value what they do enough to do that sort of thing. So the fact that he did since he was a kid.
Right.
Every little doodle he had, like, he's got that shit.
Amazing.
Unbelievable. But that comes from like a fine art background too. I think that you learn that you need to like value what you do a little bit. And I think most tattooers, we get into it and we like learn by tracing flash or whatever. It's like not as precious or as sacred or whatever. At least we don't treat it that way.
It also comes from a generational thing though, right? I mean, like when you think about, I'm not saying Ed Hardy 1800s, but 1800s, you didn't do anything but make shit. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? You made like little things. And that was what your day was. There was no TV. There was no radio. There was none of this stuff. You just made shit. And that's why when you see stuff that's so heavily detailed from that time, it's like, wow, but that's all you did. So, you know, I think that we move into an era now where, like, I'm seeing people not even using tracing paper anymore. I hate that, you know? What are you saving? You're saving the shit on your iPad that you're drawing on? I don't know. Like, it's not natural to me, so I don't understand it. But it's also something that I don't know how that lasts. It's just, is it a saved file now? Like, this is what I did on my iPad, you know, where there's something that's so raw and it comes across on tracing paper with a marker. Like, I was drawing with, I don't know, you know Frank William? Mm-hmm. He works at Smith Street, right? And he came over and I just had surgeries and stuff, and that's another reason why I haven't really done a lot of things, right? So I've just been, like, laying low. Anyway, he comes over, and he's like, yo, we should draw, man. Let's just draw. And I bust out some markers and some tracing paper, and we're drawing and stuff. And he'll draw with, like, a black pen, but, like, he won't go yellow, orange, blue, green, black, you know? And I started doing that, and he was like, yo, hello, that's sick, man. You know, then he started doing that and he was like, yo, we missed this. Like, this is a lost form. And I think that, you know, the guys that I grew up with, they're still doing that, you know?
Yeah.
But there's so much energy and power when you see a drawing that has five layers of colors on it. And then you even like see some shading done and like how this is all going to map out, you know? Or you see, like, stuff in Tattoo Time that, like, Eddie Deutsch did and color pencils and it's full back pieces or, you know, Freddie Corbin and Ed Hardy and, like, all that stuff. You know, the power that comes across there, how do you get that with today's technology drawn on an iPad?
I feel like it's possible. But I also agree that there's more power in a physical thing that you're making, where you're taking an item that leaves a mark on another item, and then it's a thing. It's definitely cooler than like making a mark on a computer screen.
Right.
But is that just a sign of, is that just the times? Because now people record music and there could be no physical copy of the music. Is it the same thing? I don't know. It's hard to know like where to draw the line on what's legit or what's cool and what's, you know, like,
yeah.
What is just part of this progression and what is actually not as cool as what used to be?
I think that it's, so I'm not saying that's not cool, right? Because I think there's something very cool in the technical aspect.
Maybe cool is not the word, but.
And cool is such a great word. That's a word I tell my girlfriend all the time. Like, that's a word that will never go away, right? It's like from the 50s and stuff. People use it still today. Kids use it. Like, that's a word to never go away.
Mm-hmm.
So. Cool isn't the right word, right?
Right.
Because it's too cool to use.
Yeah.
But the technical aspect of that is cool because you can immediately do something like, it don't work, and then just, bam, it's gone, right? Not a new piece of tracing paper or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's still cool, but I think there's a lot of power that's lost in it when you look at it on a screen, just like a book or like the Amazon Kindle, you know what I'm saying? I mean, it is what you grow up on, what's what you used to, but like to feel something in your hand and flip it and the gratification that you get when you get to the end of it, it's like I went through 300 pages, here it is, you know. You're looking at the Kindle, you don't even know how much longer you got. Unless it says, I don't know because I don't use it, but I could imagine. I mean, unless it says, you know, you're on page 6 out of 500. Does it say that? I don't know.
With books, you can also look at it and say, I'm not getting the same, like, physical experience from it, but I'm holding this little thing and it's got 500 books in it and I can throw it in my bag and I've got 500 books with me.
That's a good point.
So it's, I mean, it's always going to be weighing out the positives and whatever we perceive as negatives. Yeah, it's tough because I feel like...
Are you going to read 500 books though? Like,
no, I'm not reading any books. I'm terrible with reading. I don't even want to get into it. It's going to make me sound way stupider than someone might. I might have fooled people to think I'm a little more intellectual than I am. But
is it more stupid or stupider or...
Most stupid. Less smart.
Right.
But I think on the iPad, because I draw on an iPad, because I like the efficiency of it. But like we were talking about before, I'm definitely like street shop tattooer. So it's right. Like, you know, assembly line style a lot of the times. So, but I will still draw the same way I used to draw on paper, where I'll just do digital layers. So it's like digital tracing paper of, you know, the light color to the darker color to the dark. So I'm still getting that same experience from it.
Right.
Except now I don't have marker all over my side of my left hand, and I don't have a stack of tracing paper wadded up.
Right.
Maybe that's me not treating what I'm drawing as sacred or whatever in any way. And maybe that's a mistake. Maybe it's not.
I think there's two levels, right? I mean, I went to Mike Wilson's house, stayed with him a couple of days, never went to his house before this one time. And in his one room that was just like a guest room, he had every single black book, sketchbook from, I don't even know, 6 years old, 10 years old, something like that. Everyone. And it was lined up and they were like, you know, all the way till today, right? Or I guess it was 5 years ago. So all the way till 5 years ago. It was remarkable. No tracing papers, right? Real, just raw sketches. And every single page was sick, you know? And it's not even like tattoo stuff, like just sick artist, you know? Then you go to Chris O'Donnell's and tracing papers, like
the whole walls.
The whole walls, just everywhere, you know? And then you go to Grimes and he has suitcases because there's nowhere to, he ain't gonna put it up anymore, you know? They're just in suitcases and just maybe by the year, maybe not by the year, you know? Or other people. I'm just saying people that I know specifically that like that kind of commitment also to saving that stuff eventually in time will be worth a lot of money, in my opinion. Now, I remember going to Philadelphia convention in Philadelphia, Eddie. Yo, RIP Philadelphia, Eddie. Ed Hardy was there selling his colored tracings. He had a booth for like nothing. $200, you know what I mean? $500, I think, was like the most expensive thing, you know? Now, forget it. It would be thousands of dollars, right?
I'm sure back then people were like, $500 for a tracing paper?
Yeah. Thing? Yeah. Because I didn't buy one.
Right. Shit.
Shit. I got a photo with him. I got a sick mustache and shit on it. But yeah, no tracing, right? But now, like in the world, I feel like with the iPad and people drawing on the iPad and stuff, these tracings will be like a painting or, you know, an illustration by Stan Lee. Yo, Stan Lee, RIP.
One love.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I would be foolish to say that the iPad drawing will not be worth anything, but it is still like this digital pass where it's like you're not seeing the fuck ups. You can get rid of those fuck ups real quick, mm-hmm. you know? And like that's the beauty and that's the energy and that's the power that I'm talking about where it's like, oh, that's not really right, but it's in orange, so I'm gonna go with green and I'll make it right, you know? And then I'm gonna fine line it with black and then you're gonna see like this and it almost becomes like a painting. It almost becomes like this piece of Yeah, I mean, I'm just going a little too far or something. I know that you draw on on an iPad, so I'm not downplaying it.
Oh, no, I see it both sides for sure.
Yeah.
And I think that it is, you can't argue that it's detrimental for if someone starts tattooing today and they only ever learn to draw tattoos on an iPad, I think that's detrimental. Because the way you're describing layering, drawing like that, is the way that I learned, so I'm able to like use that, and I'm still like, you know, I've still got my foot in the pool of like kind of knowing how to go about things in like the older way. I think that is a more true parallel to how you would like draw a tattoo onto someone's arm with markers. That's exactly how you would do it, and that's why you would draw that way. And if you can do everything that way, then you're like fully prepared to tattoo anything. And personally, I feel like I'm still on the quest to like get to that point where I'm like as comfortable no matter what the parameters are.
Right.
And so, I don't know. Something about the iPad, I feel like I never had a dependable process yet. And then the iPad has helped me kind of like get there a little bit more.
Yeah.
To the point where maybe I will prefer to draw on paper again. And it's not going to feel that weird because I'll still paint. And that's the other thing. People who don't actually like real paint, if they like iPad paint and they sell prints of it.
Yeah.
The fuck out of here.
Get the fuck out of here.
That's lame.
Fuck out of here,
get
Joey.
The fuck out of here.
The fuck out of here.
But is that me just, you know, the same way that you're describing? Is that me just stuck in an older time? I don't know.
It can definitely be a generational thing.
Yeah.
You know?
I've always been the young guy, so it's weird for me to feel this way about, you know, looking at people that have tattooed less time than me and I'm like questioning how they do stuff.
What about the guys who've been tattooing for double the time that you have? But have just fallen on convention and their stuff's not really even close to what they were 10 years ago. You know what I'm saying? That's bizarre to me. They just fall on convention and then they're just like doing it.
I mean, I can see how that makes perfect sense though, because you're just coasting at a point. I don't think it would make sense to you based on what I perceive your personality type to be, because I don't think that you coast necessarily, because I think once you start coasting, you're going to do something else.
Right.
But I can understand being comfortable. And if tattooing is your one passion and you're not going to get into filmmaking and other interests, then maybe when you have your kids, instead of moving on or thinking of different things or changing your life, you're just going to coast at the shop and then have your home life. And I don't know. I think that's usually the rest of your life must get in the way of it. And you can still enjoy tattooing and have your clients and everyone thinks you're great and it's fun and it feels good still.
But how old are you?
32.
You're a smart guy, man. You got a lot. You lived a long 32 years.
I've got the Benjamin Button disease, so I'm like, I'm actually 90. Been podcasting since before you were born, son.
No, I wasn't being sarcastic. I was being serious. You got a lot behind you.
Well, I think doing the show has given me a tremendous amount of insight and forcing me to have conversations with people who know a lot more than me and people that I admire and look up to.
So what's your opinion on like, did you grow up in the Instagram thing?
No, I was pre-Instagram and I'll wear that as a badge of honor because that like makes me sound like I've been around forever. But I like, when I started tattooing, I was on MySpace, but I knew enough not to post my tattoo photos because they sucked. They were bad. So
well, that's smart on its own.
Yeah.
Shit.
Yeah.
Because I remember sending in photos into Savage magazine and getting articles printed and being
I dreamed of sending my stuff off and hopefully 6 months later my shitty tattoos would be in some shit magazine surrounded by all the other shitty tattoo photos. I think Instagram is a interesting beast, and that's like a topic that comes up on this show a lot with everybody. Personally, I like it because I've grown up with computers and I'm not scared of internet stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I see the value in it, but I also feel like the rat race of it now. And it kind of is starting to like wear on me a little bit as far as like trying to like keep up like a level of interaction. It becomes more like a business thing. Like you're like looking at your analytics and stuff and it's just stupid.
Mm. Yeah. See, I
mean, I'm interested in that stuff and I like it. I like the business side of things. It interests me, but to have that like directly tied to something that you're trying to do creatively, I think it can put a damper on things.
Yeah, for sure. I think that the worst thing about all of that whole social media thing is it just strips away the element of surprise. There's no more surprise in anything, in my opinion. There's no more surprise in what my kids are doing, right? There's like the day of them coming home, be like, "Nah, I'm dad. I did." It's like, "Yeah, I already saw it on Instagram." I don't, you know, right? Or, "Yo, I just did this sick tattoo, man. It's just tiger and fucking octopus and big broccoli leaf and right." And it's like, "Yeah, I saw that on Instagram." So like, even the communication is stripped away, and so the surprise of being like, "Look, I remember sitting down with guys, and these guys are, you know, they live in California. They come to me. They have their book. That's what you looked at. You looked at their book, and you looked at their book every year because you didn't see them for a year." And maybe sometimes you'd get like a letter in the mail, like Mike Wilson would send me a little package in the mail, like, "Yo, here's this cool tattoo I did, and here's a drawing for you, and here's a painting, and here's this." Man, it was amazing to get those packages, you know? But then these guys would sit down, and if they were inspired by you or you were inspired by them, like, they would actually let you critique the book. And even though I didn't, were nowhere near as great of a tattooer as they would, I could still see what's right and what's wrong about certain things, right? Like, if your water sucks, period, right? If you're trying, like, your new way of doing water because it's your style, end it, right? So you'd be able to, like, critique these people's book, or they would critique yours. Those days are gone, in my opinion, right? That was such a strong evolution of, like, learning how, what's right, what's not, you know, a square line, not, like, you know, shaky shit, and, like, not packed in enough. And they would sit there and say, like, "Clearly this part right here is wrong because of this," you know. Now, I don't even think you could call someone up and be like, "Yo, look at my Instagram page and tell me what's wrong with it." You know? And then also, like, you could see something amazing. Like, I remember looking through Chris Trevino's book, right? I remember, his book was like this in Japan. It was unbelievable. You just look through it. So much stuff that is actually, you just couldn't do it anymore because it was so overwhelming. It was like sensory overload. But you'd come to this back piece, you'd be like, "Oh my God," or whole, you know, full body, you'd be like, "What? Sick." Or Horiyoshi. Like, I remember watching Horiyoshi just draw a circle here, on this girl, three circles.
And he's like, "Dragon sleeve."
He's like, "Chrysanthemum sleeve." That's it, you know? Yeah. And like, me and Siv are watching this go down, and it was remarkable to see that.
Yeah.
I'm going off topic a little bit, but, you know, this specifically is, those days are gone. So now when I flip through Instagram, and I remember when I first started to go through Instagram, tattoos were really, really big in the beginning. Like, it was a big part of Instagram, you know? And I was psyched for the tattoo community to be that exposed in that kind of way. Like, I remember going to Bert's page and being like, "Fuck, 30,000 people, like... 4 years ago, you know, I was like, "Damn, that's sick," you know? And then you would go to, like, the front page of what's cool or whatever. And it had nothing to do with what you liked at that point, because it wasn't just so sophisticated technology that at that moment. It was just, like, how many people liked the stuff. And you saw a lot of tattoo stuff, you know? And I was like, "Damn, who's this?" And you'd be able to explore and reach and find out new tattooers that were there. And I wasn't really, I wasn't into tattooing. I mean, I was always looking at it, but nothing was impressive. Like, I was not really impressed with a lot of stuff. So I was just like, whatever. But every once in a while, you come across something, you'd be like, "Who's this in Australia? Who's this in Philippines?" Like, amazing, you know? So that's where I thought it was really great. But then it got to the point where, like everything, you're just flipping through it and nothing matters, you know? Mm-hmm. You're actually liking it because your friend did it.
Exactly.
Not because it's a great tattoo, or not because it's some new inventive thing that they came up with, or
what you like about it is solely that it stands out in some way.
Right.
Yeah. Not even because it's great or new or different. It's just something about it. It could be so simple, but it just makes it stand out from the pack, and that's going to be like the best one of the day.
Right. Or like now you're following shops, right? It's like...
it's tiring.
It's exhausting. It's totally exhausting. And now you're it's almost like your brain is just programmed that you've got to flip through all of it until you get to the point where it's like, okay, you've looked through it all now. Like, you caught up.
Phew.
Yeah, like, oh man, they got caught up. Which is why I can only follow, like, I can't follow more than 200 people. You know what I'm saying? Because I actually like to look through my feed, mm-hmm. and I don't really like go to people's pages and stuff like that. That's when everything kind of changed too, when like feeds became, to see what Eat Circuit, big problem with that was you had to go to people's pages to see their new stuff. There was no such thing as a feed. Facebook created that feed,
yeah,
which was brilliant. You know, whatever you liked, that came into your feed. So now, like, when things are in your feed and Instagram and you're like flipping through it, it's like, okay, I follow 200 people, so I'm going to look at the 200. Okay, flip, flip, flip. Okay, I caught up. Great. If I followed like 1,000 people, there's no possible way that you could do that.
You just don't see it all. That's the problem.
Yeah.
There's people whose work I really like, and I think, man, do they never post anymore? I go to their page, and there's like 15 tattoos I haven't seen right. in the past few weeks. And then once I go to their page, now I'll see them for a couple of weeks, but it's like, it's so disappointing that you yeah. don't even get to see what you sign up to see anymore.
Yeah, so element of surprise is gone, and it's not even just with tattoos. Like I said, it's just with like your friends or your cousins.
Like, who goes to a high school reunion now? You already know what everybody does.
That's a good point.
I always think about that.
Like, I would never, ever even go to a high school reunion. But besides that,
but
yes.
if you were, you know. It's like my wife's 10-year high school reunion was last year. And she didn't go because she already knows. She knows where everyone works. She knows how many kids they have, what they're fucking eat for breakfast. Everything about them.
Yeah.
So, like, what do you go and catch up on? You're like, oh, hey, nice to see you. Yeah, I saw you went on that trip to Iceland last year. It's like,
right.
How lame. Like, you can't tell anyone, even a stranger, someone you haven't seen in 10 years, you can't even tell them something they don't know
right.
about you.
Right.
So fucked.
So you don't like it.
That part of it, I do think, is lame. Because it all that stuff is made for us to, like, be connected. But then when I see you, it's like, oh, yeah, I know you got a fucking cat. I don't want to see your cat. Right. Like, it just kills that.
You get over here, you're going to see my cat.
Yeah,
all the time.
Sorry, bro. So I don't know what the answer would be. Like, what's the next thing? Are people going to revolt? Because I think people are growing to see the corporate evil of the Zuck. You got to get off Facebook because we're all getting zucked.
I was telling you about my business partner that I just saw, I had lunch with yesterday. He was crazy into Facebook. And as we were a digital marketing agency and a social media agency and a technology company, like, that was it. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you weren't on Facebook, what were you doing? Because we're now telling our clients, this is where you got to be. You know, we're telling the corporate environment, this is where you got to be. And I wasn't on it. And I got so much flack from my business partner. He was like, how could you do this? This is our business. And you're telling everyone to be, you know, you're telling the clients to be on, you ain't on it. And I'm like, I don't fucking like it. You know, so I don't trust it. I don't like it. I don't, whatever. No. And then yesterday he's like, yeah, man, the whole Facebook thing. Like, I try to delete all my stuff. I can't. It's like, they won't let me. And it's weird. I mean, who cares, really? At the end of the day, the data that you're putting on there, great. People can market to you.
Right.
That's really it. You know what I mean? If you're a serial killer or something like that, maybe you shouldn't have put your stuff on there. Like, right. If you're going to do something, you're going to shoot up a school or whatever, maybe you shouldn't have put your stuff up on there. But, like, us, it's just our personal data that now marketers can market to easier. And now when you're looking at Facebook, you're like, how the fuck, how do they know what I just searched for a skull online and now a skull pops up for me to buy? you know?
Yeah, I mean, that part of it has never really disturbed me. Being advertised to more specifically, it's probably a good thing because people do buy more shit and that's why they do it. And I'm sure everyone who complains about it has clicked on a banner ad and they bought some shit on Amazon that they left in their cart yesterday and that's why it's there, or what, you know, whatever it is. So that it's not that that bothers me. I think it's more just like the societal implications that it can have. And I'm not that deep and I don't really care about a lot of shit, but there's something about all that stuff where, and maybe that's just getting older, where I'm finally old enough where I can remember a time that was different than now. So it gives me something to think about.
Do you feel like there's too much dopamine that's being released, or there's not enough?
To me personally, it's definitely a problem. I can feel myself being sucked into it more and more as time progresses.
Right. Oh man, 50 likes? Shit, my last one got 200.
Yeah, I mean, I can look at it more. I don't connect it to my own emotions as much, I guess, when it comes to like tattoo pictures. Because I know if I do what I think is a great black and gray tattoo that's super tricked out and it looks wet and it looks shiny and it looks cool, it's going to get no likes because no one cares about black and gray unless you've built your whole following on that, which I haven't.
Right.
So it's like, I see it as the game that it is, as like a marketing person would look at it.
Yeah.
But there is something to like flipping it on and then you just see like, what's the number on the notification thing. And it's not that it affects my mood, but like I'm still checking it. So why am I checking it? There's something to that.
Yeah.
And I hate feeling like I have to punctuate everything I do with like looking at my phone at something.
You know what's weird is like what exactly you post gets the reaction, right? Like that's what's weird to me, because I was so embedded in the car world that like when I post something about a person's collection or even one of my old cars or something like that, you get like 300, 400 likes, right? Post something to tattoo, maybe you get like 100 likes. Post like me and my kids, it's like 60 likes. You know, you post something, you know, your cat, and you don't follow like Russian Blue fucking World or whatever, you get like 20 likes. You know, that's just interesting to me that even matters, you know, of how many likes you get due to whatever it is that you post. I mean, I post, I'm just keeping like a photographic diary of my life. That's it. That's all it is. It's not even about the likes or how many followers or any of that kind of stuff. That's what really drew me to Instagram to begin with, when like Facebook and, you know, all these other things, Christian Mingle and J-Date, all these things, you know, were popping up. It was like, man, I actually did this on my forum. And this is why people like really liked my forum. It's because we would go out, we'd go driving, I would take pictures outside my car. I'd come back. I'd go into Photoshop. I'd like, maybe, you know, highlight them in certain ways and like high contrast, post them. There'd be like 100 photos of the day. And people love that. You know what I mean? Like that's what it was. And it was way before the phone was able to do what it does today, or even half of what it was able to do. But that's what took off, you know? And like that's what inspires me, really, is like, just the photographs are cool. It has nothing at all to do with the status of, you know, Instagram fame.
I guess that's what I don't like about it, is that it's almost not what it was intended to be originally anymore. Right.
Well, once celebrities get a hold of anything, it becomes something else anyway.
Yeah, well, now the fact that that's what determines your celebrity, I guess that probably sums it up as simply as you can. I think that a forum is a like the best way of communicating still, because it is more, you're truly connected because you're actually discussing things. I'm sure there's forums now where people, I mean, especially with like politics and stuff, where it's not a lot of discussion. And I guess like the comment sections on Facebook and stuff, you see anything that's political and you get like, nobody is actually discussing anything. They're just like saying their stuff. And then if you disagree, then they've like block you or, right. You know, so it's just so much wasted time and so much wasted effort, that I think a forum, exactly as you described back when you had the first forum that you were part of, it was, you were truly connected to people. they actually care to see a picture of your kid every now and again, or, you know, personal stuff.
Yeah.
Because it's not just about cars, or it's not just about tattoos. Like, they're actually invested in you as a person. They're your friend.
Right.
And I think that that's the only way I could see things shifting, is back to more of a format like that, where maybe we can all stand to split off and find our own little pockets.
Yeah.
But I think that does happen, and that can create some dangerous things too. I don't have the answer. You probably have the answer, but if you do, you should wait 10 years before you put it out, because it might be another missed opportunity for you.
That's a good one. I do not have the answer.
Well, I guess we're done here.
Yeah. Great way to
I came
end
for
it.
The answers. I don't even tattoo. I don't even have a podcast. I'm just trying to get your ideas.
Oh, it's funny.
What do you want to say to tattooing? It might be 2019 by the time people hear this.
I want to say thank you to tattooing. Like, it shaped my life in a way that I don't think any other industry could have ever done. Dan Higgs had a great card. I don't know if some people know it, some people don't. It was like, it said, "My way is not the only way, but it's the only way you'll get from me." Mm-hmm. Dan Higgs. That's it. That's what he gave you. It really resonated with me when I saw that card. Forget about it even in tattooing, just in life in general, you know? It's like, not my way is my way or the highway, you know? But it's like, this is who I am. This is what you get. This is me. I'm not covering anything up. And I think that tattooing had a lot to do with it, to shape me as a human being. So thank you.
I want to thank Bradley for being on the show this week. After being outside of tattooing for so many years, to jump back into a tattoo podcast and just be so excited to talk about tattoos still was pretty cool to see. If you want to follow him on Instagram, you can find him at @allmyghosts_. If you want to follow me on Instagram, you can find me at Andrew Stortz. Another thank you to our sponsors, Machine Machine Co. and Split Arrow Prints. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please consider giving the show a 5-star rating and a great review. It helps other people find the show who may not see it any other way. If you want to learn more about Books Close, go to our website at booksclosepodcast.com, where you'll find all the information about other episodes, guests, merch, show notes. It's all there. Just go check it out. And next week, we'll be joined by another great tattooer who has put a lot of work into the world of digital design. We'll see you then.